You're tuning in to the Moss LeRae Show.
Purpose is more so allowing God's will to be done.
We need to give our kids and our young people the opportunity to dream to be kings and queens.
My identity isn't in what I do, but it's in who I am.
I'm your host, Alicia LeRae Ellis. Never miss a beat. Stay mic'd up with Moss LeRae.
Welcome to the Moss LeRae Show. I'm your host, Alicia Ellis, and I have a very, very special guest, my friend, Melissa Medina. How are you?
Hi, Alicia. Good. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm doing great and even better now.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, and just a warm welcome to the show and the Moss LeRae platform. We're excited just to have you and dive deep into all the goodness that you have going on. So again, just welcome to the show. We're excited to have you on our platform. I want to do a little brief introduction. I'm not a huge fan of reading bios, but I'm going to read a little bit of yours, and then I would love for you to just share a little bit more about your story, and we'll just like jump right into it. How's that sound?
Thank you. Good.
Awesome. Awesome. Melissa Medina is no shy figure to the tech, innovation, and entrepreneurship world. With over 20 years of experience as an entrepreneur herself, an operator, investor, community leader, and she is a native of Miami, Florida, which I'm a huge fan of. We'll jump into that. But Melissa is also the co-founder and CEO of Emerge Americas, with a mission of helping transform South Florida's global tech hub. So she's passionate about transforming Miami into a global technology hub and supporting Miami-based nonprofits. Melissa is also a mother of 5 children. She's passionate, and I love all the work that you're doing. So I just want to kind of turn over to you if anything that I didn't share in that brief of introduction.
Thank you. No, that was wonderful and super kind introduction. I guess if I would add anything is just that not only am I a native Miamian, but I think even more importantly is that I'm first generation American. My parents are both Cuban immigrants, and it's just part of my DNA in always kind of thinking back to their roots and what they sacrificed, my grandparents and my parents, to, you know, become part of this country, the what I would consider the country that offers the most opportunities in the world, and just always extremely grateful and humble to have been able to be given the opportunities I've been given because of their sacrifices. And it's something that, you know, I think about every day, both in my personal and professional life. And I just really don't take that for granted, kind of channel that through everything that I do.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful origin story, which is kind of where I want to start. I personally got a chance to meet you and know you over the last couple of years, met your father, and learned about this origin story of what really people have coined to be part of the American dream. And it's an amazing story. And it's really what drew me in. You know, there's a lot of people doing tech work, entrepreneurship work around the world, right? And one of the things that I felt that was very genuine with you is your relationship with your father. Obviously, the Hispanic bloodline and the culture you guys come from, it's really captivating. The passion that I heard your father speak about as relates to the work that you all do, really, like, it just draws you in. It's just like, and you guys make you feel like family. Just being as far as I am from Cleveland to Miami and traveling back and forth. So I feel like that passion and that genuineness really speaks to the work, and obviously the impact speaks for itself. But I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into that origin story, how you got started, how your family got started, celebrating 10 years this year of Emerge Americas, which is amazing. Congratulations on that part.
Big milestone for sure. I'd say not only for us as an organization, as a family, but really more for our entire community and ecosystem. I think a lot has happened over the last decade. So many people have kind of come together and aligned on this passion that you're talking about as well, and aligned with the mission of really helping to foster, you know, a thriving and diverse tech, entrepreneurial, innovative ecosystem here in South Florida.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to be a part of, and just understanding how you guys got there, and really seeing what your father has really been a pioneer in this space for decades now. Can you share a little bit about kind of what got him started in this space for those who are listening and be tuning in to this episode?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I look up to my father on multiple fronts. I think we would need to be here for days to kind of really talk through everything that he's taught me. And I think as I get older, I realize more and more, you know, how lucky I am and grateful I am to have been raised by him and my mom as well, who's been extremely supportive. But, you know, the origin story, which is all blended between him and Terramark, which is the company that he founded and then Emerge, really started that my father has been an entrepreneur all his life. He came to the United States at 13 years old as a teenager, at, you know, in the middle of the night on a boat, you know, just like many other, you know, unfortunate Cuban immigrant stories. Fortunate for him and my grandparents, they made it through that, you know, treacherous journey, right, from Cuba and happened to land in Miami. They didn't know where they were going to land. And that is a big part, I think, of where the passion is channeled from and why we don't leave Miami. Because in his company that he built, which was called Terramark Worldwide, it's an IT infrastructure and cloud computing company that he started circa 2000, 2001. Many people would ask, why are you headquartered in Miami? This is a global data center company with operations and employees all over the world. He could have chosen to have his headquarters in Silicon Valley if he wanted to, or Boston, or in Virginia, where he had a lot of clients and customers. And he always said, this has been the community where I have received my opportunities. This is, I'm not moving my global headquarters from here. And that's really, I think, where the idea of Emerge started to be planted without us really knowing. It was those conversations that we would have. It was frustrations in hiring, trying to hire top tier talent, whether it was an engineer, developer, cybersecurity professional, to move to Miami to basically, you know, work for a company that, yes, was solid and a great company, but they're like, to move to Miami? I mean, what other opportunities am I going to have there in tech if I decide 5 years from now that I want to, you know, work in another organization? So all of those sort of frustrations, coupling that with the passion that was rooted here in Miami because of that immigrant story, is why sort of that idea of Emerge was born. And it was a conversation between my father and I after Terramark, again, the company he founded, was sold to Verizon in 2011, which was, you know, I was just beyond proud of him. His story is long and he's had a lot of ups and downs in his companies. And, you know, the fact that this, you know, Cuban immigrant didn't know the language, came with nothing, ended up selling his company to an organization like Verizon was just phenomenal on so many levels. And it didn't end there, which is what I love most about him. It was, now what can we do to change all these frustrations that we have felt here? Now what can we do to give back and really try to foster, you know, these connections and connect the dots between, you know, this tech ecosystem and try to help for people to begin using Miami and tech in the same sentence, which really wasn't happening. Nobody was looking at Miami, South Florida, or the region as this potential to become, you know, a tech hub, top 10 tech hub in the world. Nobody was looking at us like that. And he's a visionary. There's no question. I feel very, very, very humble and grateful that I get to learn from him, work with him, and hopefully some of what he's done has transferred to me a bit. And, you know, if I could channel even a little bit of that, then, you know, then I think we're on the right track.
Wow. That's such an amazing journey, that I had the pleasure of learning about over the last few years, but to be poured into like that, you know, I think that's something that money can't buy. People wish for, people read books about, people watch documentary series to get the experience that you have gotten from your father and from that amazing story, that not only that you can look back upon, but can lead you, right? Lead you forward, continue to be that pathway. And the cat's really out the bag. I mean, Miami is the hottest space right now in the world for technology and innovation. And I feel like you guys are just leading the way in so many spaces. And I think what COVID really showed us is like Silicon Valley is really a concept. It's not based on a geographic location. And what you guys have done in Miami is it's amazing. And hearing different people's perspectives on what has taken place, obviously hearing yours and seeing you like literally in the weeds of it every day, and seeing how many people are really genuinely excited about what's taking place there. Again, just want to congratulate you and your family just on that history, because that's really what it is, history in the making.
Thank you. No, you mentioned something that I think is a really important part of the story too. And it's that, you know, COVID, certainly none of us want to live through that again, right? That was a pandemic that I think affected everybody globally in one way or another. But there was a silver lining for Florida. There's no question, kind of looking back at perspective wise. And that's that it opened this global lens into what I feel there was a solid foundation for already, but where the masses were not talking about it and where the media wasn't really paying attention. And all of a sudden it was like lights, camera, action on South Florida and really the entire state of Florida for a multitude of reasons. And you're spot on with Silicon Valley sort of being a concept. And not only that, I think it showed that growing a company doesn't have to be captive of any area code. And that's sort of the story that we tell with Miami too. We're not trying to, you know, make it seem that Miami is the end all be all. On the contrary, this may be a place where you can build your company, where you want to build your company. And in my opinion, there are several reasons why people should, but it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be other options and that you can't decide where you want to live and where you want to build your company and where you want to try to find that balance of your quality of life professionally and personally. So I'm all about just creating complementary, I guess, launch pads of innovation where it, you know, we don't need to say it's only happening in Silicon Valley or it's only happening in Boston or Austin or New York or Barcelona for that matter, but that now, you know, you can live anywhere and decide what's best for you, what works best for you. And I don't think that mentality was there before COVID.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And who doesn't want to be like on the coast, like Miami, while growing,
I agree.
developing a business? Like it's just for me coming, you know, being having Hispanic roots myself and understanding I lived down in Florida for a couple years during middle school. And I didn't really appreciate it as much as I do now as an adult, the freedom that comes with going to the ocean and really that reset and that balance that it doesn't always have to be work, work, work. Like you can create a balance and a lifestyle for yourself that's conducive to your mental health, to your spirituality, and to your overall well-being. And that's something I know that it's part of your sales pitch and how you attract companies, because it's the easy one. It's just like the sun, period.
Yeah. The sun alone, being able to spend time outside. Again, if anything COVID taught us is that we need that in our lives. And, you know, the perspective of trying to find that balance, if you will, is really important. And, you know, not taking things for granted. And I know, I think I felt like I learned a lot of lessons throughout COVID. And, you know, you mentioned taking it for granted. And I think, I mean, growing up here too, I think I did as well. I don't think I realized, you know, what a really special place Miami is for so many different reasons, again, both personally and professionally, but I clearly see that now. And, you know, I'm raising my family here and I hope, you know, I want my kids to spread their wings and make their own, you know, decisions in the future. But I hope that what we've done collectively, not only us as a family and organization, but what this community has done provides opportunity for them to want to come back later if they want to. You know, if they leave for college or they decide they want to work in another state, that, you know, that they decide, you know, I actually really love where I grew up and I love home and I have all these opportunities there now that I don't think were there as much growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's amazing. And for you, right, you could have done anything, right? You could have went into so many different career paths or industries. Like for you, why this work, you know, I'm sure you inspired, we talked about your father's story, but for you to make a conscious choice every day to show up in this space, which is not easy. I mean, you're a disruptor. We're talking about systemic issues. We're talking about generational things that you are changing the narrative on. For you, why? What's your why?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And no, you're right. I mean, being a Latina in this space is definitely not the majority, you know. Tech in general is still very, very male dominated. But my why at the time was that I think I believed in what we could build and the opportunity and the void in the market so much. You know, I did research for 2 years before we ended up saying, okay, we're going to launch and begin with this convening, right? It wasn't a global tech conference at first. So I studied the Austin market. I studied the Boston market. I studied the Silicon Valley market. And I just kept telling myself, we have all these incredible elements. We can become a complementary tech hub. Like, I really felt that. And I also felt that there was this connection to Latin America with so many other industries, the financial industry. We were the gateway to Latin America. But in terms of tech and entrepreneurship, it wasn't the case. And I had already traveled a lot through Latin America and met just incredible entrepreneurs, so much talent, and realized, man, no one's really concentrating on this either. And Miami seems to be the perfect place to convene all of these stakeholders that are interested in potentially expanding from LATAM to the rest of the world. In my mind, it was through Miami makes the most sense. Because all of those elements together, and also having worked with my father for 10 years at Terramark before it sold, I felt all those frustrations myself too, and found myself saying, man, I wonder if I could be a change maker, in this space. I wonder if, you know, I can help lead this now. And just, you know, took it on head first and have really enjoyed the ride and continue to be as passionate about it now as I was really 12 years ago is when we had the conversation. 10 years ago is when we opened our doors, and just really love the work that we're doing because it's much more than a conference and an event. I mean, we have taken this into a full year-round platform, and we launched an accelerator program. We work with entrepreneurs from around the world, specifically focused on bridging those gaps for underrepresented entrepreneurs and founders. We publish and track venture activity. There's so much more to the work that we do that I love, that I really, really, really love and enjoy to do. That's kind of why I decided, no, this is something that I want to take on, and I want to take the risk, and I want to help build something myself, roll my sleeves up. And it's been exciting.
Yeah. And then you can look, I mean, look at the fruit, right? Look at the impact 12 years later, celebrating your 10th year now. I think last year was 20,000 plus attendees at the conference, which is amazing. You know, I shared with you before how many people from the Cleveland ecosystem is in Miami. Even some right now leading up to the conference, but just year round because of the momentum, it's real. So I want to draw attention to not only the work, right? Because it's amazing and it's so fruitful and the impact is sustainable. But I want to talk a little bit about those disparities, right? We know the data shows that less than 2% of women are getting VC backing. That's another 1% for Hispanics, less than 1%, less than 2% for Blacks. So for you in this space, how are you guys disrupting that and changing the narrative specifically around Latinos in tech? Because we hear like, oh, there's no Latinos in tech, or there's no Latinos in innovation.
Yeah.
But
that's
let alone
the excuse.
Yeah.
No, it's just the, you know, there isn't many Black female founders, or there isn't many Latinos, like we can't find them. Like, here I am, we'll help. Trust me. There's plenty of amazing minority founders. And so to answer your question, this is something that we work on year round. For example, our accelerator, which is composed of every year around 100 different companies, early to growth stage companies, it ends up being over 200 founders. Over 70% of our cohort are minority founders. And that's not by coincidence. That's because we're doing work year round. We're hosting startup pitch competitions throughout Latin America. We're hosting pitch competitions specifically on Hispanic Heritage Month, Black History Month, Women's History Month, Pride Month, that is creating a platform for these founders to be seen, and then for these founders to receive micro grants from us. And then a step further is inviting them into our accelerator program, where they have 7 weeks virtual programming that provides them not only with a network connection to investors, but also more importantly, with tools to help them scale their company. And then that all culminates and ends at the conference, where we give all of these founders at no charge. There's no charge for them to apply, no charge for the program, no charge for them to attend Emerge, the booth we give them at Emerge, none of that. And that's because I feel, and we all feel as an organization, that these entrepreneurs and these founders should be our focus. They should be the nucleus of what we're building, because if they are able to be successful, if they are able to hire talent, if they're able to raise funds, it's like this positive snowball effect. And we are hyper focused on the underrepresented founder throughout all of our programming. And that's one way that, you know, I think there's so much more that we could do, I'm sure, but it's a very concerted way of us to say, this is how we're trying to move the needle. And this is how we are actually moving the needle, because we're tracking the data and we're seeing the impact that we're having on these minority founders. And we'll continue to push ourselves to get those numbers up. We used to be at 40% of our cohort, then 50% of our cohort was minority, then 65%. This year, we're over 70%. Every year, I want to get to 100% within the next year or two. And that's, you know, you can't do that without making sure that everybody is aligned in creating more of these opportunities to, you know, shine a light on these amazing founders. I mean, they deserve it. And so we don't want the VC excuse of, oh, we can't find them, or, oh no, where are they? We're gonna show you where they are.
Yes. And I love that, like the entrepreneur being the nucleus, right? Because I'm in this space, and it's not always that. A lot of times when you're working with organizations or corporate, even government, right, they're the ones leading it. They're the ones in the center, and it's really about them. And then the entrepreneurs are kind of like the side effect of the work that's being done, versus your model of being in the center. Everything evolves around the entrepreneur, the minority entrepreneur at that, just speaks to the volumes of the mission of what you guys are doing. So I want to use this time, because I attended Emerge last year. I'm a huge supporter of Emerge Americas. And to my experience thus far, it is one of the best conferences, if not the best conferences in tech. And I put one together in Cleveland. So it is definitely something. No, it's not. It's something to strive for, though. And I want to definitely give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about this year's conference, the dates, what people can expect, and kind of get the audience excited about Emerge America's 10-year anniversary happening this April.
Awesome. I was so happy you were there last year, and I hope that we find ourselves dancing in that finale beach party again, you know, under the sun. This year, it's really special for me. We are essentially around the corner. The 10-year anniversary is April 18th and 19th of this year. So it is fast approaching. As I say, it's been a marathon, and now we're in the final sprint. I think something really special about this year is that we've added just additional layers. It's not that it's so different, but we're always thinking through, you know, how can we make this a little different? How can we add? How can we complement what we've done in the past? We're focusing on emerging tech trends, and, you know, AI, quantum. We're focusing a lot on the intersection of healthcare and technology. I think we're really putting ourselves sort of at the forefront of what's next. What's the next decade going to look like? And that's really what we're focusing on this year, bringing together global thought leaders from across the world, across industries, but hyper-focused on how is innovation driving these industries? What new trends are we seeing? We want every Emerge attendee to leave there, one, making sure that they have had amazing collisions with people that they've met. There's nothing more than I love to hear about these accidental collisions that happen that led to whether they began working together, or led to an investment opportunity, or they just became new friends. So those accidental collisions are super, super important. Two, that they walk away with learning something new. And that's where all of the multiple stages that we have with thought leaders come in. We want to make sure that these thought leaders are making our attendees think, right? Think about what's next in technology, or how they could apply that technology in their lives or in their profession. And lastly, we're in Miami. We're Latino. We do not shy away from the fact that we want them to have fun. It doesn't have to be, you know, so square. I want this to be outside the box. We say all the time, we're not your typical tech conference, and we're not. We don't want to be, you know, placed in some sort of mold. You're going to see colors. You're going to see and hear a lot of music, and you're going to have a lot of fun networking opportunities as well. And that has sort of been our matrix from the beginning, even though it has evolved and there's no question it's, you know, changes a little bit year after year, but that core of what we want our attendees to experience really hasn't changed at all.
It's so Miami. I mean, so Miami. The vibe, the energy, the fact that this was like one of my takeaways, the fact that it ended on Miami Beach, right? And the beach party, like, this just like was the cherry on top of celebration, of feeling good about yourself, feeling good about the connections.
Being outside
in the sun, just all of it, feet, toes in the sand, dancing, eating good music. Yes. Eating good food. You can't miss the food. It's all like the Latino energy and culture is integrated into the full conference, that I can just really appreciate, from music to food, to the hospitality, right? Cause that's one thing as, Latinos, we definitely know how to serve others and just be there and support one another. And you feel that from the moment you arrive there at the convention center, which is just overall amazing. And I can just personally share my testimony on being there. I still building relationships just from attending last year's conference a year later. When I go back down there, I'm meeting with people who I met originally at the conference and building those relationships. Yes. It's just really,
years.
Yes, it's just amazing. And just to see it grow at the rate that it's been growing, again, just kudos to you, and your family.
A team effort, not only
yes.
obviously the Emerge team, but in general. I mean, we've had so much support from different organizations in our community. And I think, you know, a lot of people say as they travel to Miami or end up moving here, we feel that people want to be connected, want to help us get connected. We feel that we've been very warmly received in moving to Miami. And all of that is something that I love, love, love to hear, because it really, like, if we're able to connect the dots between these stakeholders, entrepreneurs to investors and global tech organizations, even government and academia, all of that is going to help us continue to build what we want to see South Florida become. Because I think being born and raised here, I don't think there's been a more exciting time in our community. And I think there's just still so much opportunity ahead of us. You know, we're a very young, young city, very young in comparison to most metropolitan cities across the US. And that leads me to believe that the opportunities are just tenfold here.
It's endless. It's endless. And just the impression that it has on the entrepreneurs. You know, I was a judge at the pitch competition last year, the day before the conference, and meeting literally hundreds of entrepreneurs and seeing, right, they're nervous because it is nerve-wracking a bit because you're pitching for a large amount of money.
It's not easy.
No. But yet there's things to get them celebrated after, right? And how do we keep them loose? And it's just amazing to see the impact that the entrepreneurs have, because, right, they're the center and all this is put together for their experience as the priority in this space. So that's just great. And I'm looking forward to being down there in another, what is it, week and a half, 2 weeks now?
Less than 2 weeks.
Less than 2 weeks in the countdown, for sure.
Countdown is on.
Well, I appreciate you sharing about Emerge Americas. I want to kind of transition for our audience to learn a little bit about Melissa, right? Because, right, we hear the CEO, president, co-founder, investor, all these great accolades that you have been able to achieve. But what makes you, right? So I want to kind of break it up, and we like to do like little fun games on our show. So I'm going to give you a word. I have a list of words, and when I say the word, I want you to give us back the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Okay. So the first word is Miami.
Vibes.
Women.
Breaking ceilings.
Food.
croquetas.
Entrepreneurship.
A grind.
Family.
Everything.
Tech.
Innovation.
Baseball.
Don't follow it.
Latinos.
The majority. Majority, minority. Minority, yeah. Majority, minority.
I love that. Purpose.
Purpose. Legacy.
Music.
Energy.
Art.
Creativity.
The beach.
Disconnection.
All right, my last one. Fashion.
Colors.
All right. I wanted to end with fashion because not many people can pull off a lime green suit. So I actually wore a lime green suit to our conference last year. And it was just so funny how many compliments, because not a lot of people can pull that off. So I wanted to ask you, like, what inspires your outfits? Because as a woman in this space, if you think about 20 years ago, or maybe even 10 years ago, where we were taught to wear the grays, the blacks, the navies, not to show anything, not to wear the jewelry or the colors. We're totally disrupting that. Also wearing sneakers, right? It's also that Miami vibe. So can you talk about kind of your sense of fashion and your boldness in this space as being a Latina?
Thank you. Yeah, what a great topic. You know, fashion, this is probably the next word that would have come out of my mouth. Really was inspired by my grandmother, my mom's mom, who came from Cuba in her mid-30s, went to college, got her accounting degree, started her accounting firm. I mean, just a trailblazer herself, especially as a Cuban female. And she was always dressed just, it's not that she was overly, what's the word? It wasn't too much. It was just, she was always dressed how in the most beautiful way. And she would always tell me in Spanish, you know, that for her, dressing good made her feel good. And it wasn't about the brand name. It was just what she wore helped her in her mood throughout the day. That, and people were always complimenting her. Her name was Virginia, but we would call her Mimi. And I would always tell her, ay, Mimi, esos aretes, qué lindo. Like how beautiful those earrings. She would wear colorful earrings. And she would just have this big smile on her face. And I feel like I realized from a very young age with her that it just channeled this beautiful energy that she gave off and radiated to everyone that she met. And it was, of course, her personality. But I think she channeled that personality with people that she didn't know, you know, through her fashion sense. And even her gowns to go to sleep. I mean, they were these like just beautiful colors and gorgeous. And I think then my mom is, she's much more fashion forward than I am, for sure. And, you know, just a beautiful, beautiful woman, and inspired me very much. So I think it really has become a combination of the women that I saw growing up, you know, specifically my mom and her mom. And then kind of making it my own. And to your point, not feeling shy about wearing colors. And, you know, if people say that, calling attention, it's not that. For me, it's who I am. It wouldn't be me if I went up there, you know, in a all black suit. I just could never see that happening. I think a pop of color just says something about how you're feeling and the energy that you might portray. But I think if you ask me, yeah, where that stemmed from, it definitely started with Mimi, for sure.
I love that. That's such a beautiful story. And it's also like, it, obviously it goes on par with your guys' brand too. And this is the Miami flow of all things too. Curious, you already have your outfits ready for Emerge?
I have one.
Okay.
I don't have the second one picked out yet. And even that one, it always happens. Even that one, I won't be sure until that week.
Yep.
If 100% that's what I'm going to wear. But it will it involve color? For sure. No
Absolutely.
Question. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it has to. I think it too. It makes you to. Fun. Like if you're not having fun in this work, then what are we doing? You know, like, and yes, because it is, it's hard work and we are breaking those ceilings and breaking those barriers. But we get to, we should be able to have fun while doing it too. So,
yeah, you know, we're in Miami where there's beaches and where there's this culture of, you know, the Caribbean here too. And that lends itself to, you know, a lot of bright colors and floral arrangements and just, you know, that tropical vibe, I guess, is very present here.
Definitely. And not shying. I love that part where you said, like, not shying away from that. But this is who I am, and being bold and how that encourages other women, even men too, in this space. Like, we don't have to. It's 100 degrees outside. Like, why am I in like a 4-piece suit? This is ridiculous. And I've been at.
Now that you say that, it's interesting. I've gotten a few people that I've randomly like ran into post-emerge conferences, and they've come, women, and they've come up to me and said, like, pulled up their pants and they're like, look, I'm wearing sneakers. And she's like, you know why? Because I saw you on stage with your suit rocking sneakers. And she said, you know, I've always just every day worn heels day and night. And I thought that was just so awesome to hear, you know? And I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned that now, but I've had several women come up to me and say that, and the same thing about like the color of the suit. And yeah, I don't think I really like filtered it much until you mentioned it now.
Yeah. And like, who has time? Like, it's really impossible to have heels on while you're managing a conference. Like, that sounds like a horrible experience. And I'm not signing up.
I did it, believe it or not, the first couple of years.
Wow.
I didn't do thin heels, but I did wedges because I felt, you know, you have to wear height and you have to wear heels for a business event. And what happened to my feet was just, it was awful, awful.
Yeah.
Even with wedges. And I just thought, why am I doing this?
Right.
Why? You know, even then. And so it's something that you learn, and it takes time to really kind of, and I wouldn't say I'm 100% comfortable, but I think as you get older and through experience, I think, you know, you learn the lessons of just asking, really? Is this something that I'm putting the pressure on myself to do this? Or is this an external pressure that I really should not be listening to?
Yeah.
And that has taken time. I mean, I'm in my mid, basically almost my mid 40s, and I'm still learning.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful. And I love your vulnerability in that, because there is this image that we have to fulfill for people to also feel comfortable around us, especially being the majority minority in these spaces. Like, we've been taught and really conditioned to making sure people feel comfortable. And sometimes me wearing pink or you wearing green makes someone feel uncomfortable, but that's not our problem. That's their problem. So breaking through that and not being apologetic about it, I love it. So with that, I want to kind of get into, right, you're doing so much. You're also a mother, a wife, a daughter. You're CEO of a huge organization that's leading the way in technology and innovation. Like, how do you personally balance? Like, how do you, and also a dog mom. I don't want to skip over that. But how do you balance everything for you?
Yeah, I don't think I have found full balance, if I'm being honest. I think it's deliberate choices that I now make every day. And every day is different. You know, it might be that today I have to make choices that have to benefit my organization and unfortunately, you know, will affect my family a bit. And other days I have to make decisions that, is this really important for me to miss this family event or be with my kids? Or can I, you know, choose my family today? And so it's always kind of that, me creating that, trying to create that daily balance. It's definitely gotten better. I think the way that I'm able to do it, though, to be honest, is that I'm very transparent with my kids. They see the work that I'm pouring into Emerge. I make sure that they are not only at the main conference, but even the smaller pitch events and what I'm doing with entrepreneurs, I want them to know that if I'm missing one of their lacrosse games or soccer games, that it's not because I don't want to be there. And I want them to get excited and about what I'm building and what we're building. So that's one way. And another way, to be super honest, is that I have an amazing village. I really, really do. And without that village of not only family, but what I would call family, right? Friends that are family that are really helping, I think it would be impossible to receive, to have any type of balance. But I do think also, kind of going back to what I said earlier about experience and age and lessons, you know, I think it gets a little bit easier where I don't sweat the small stuff anymore. I really, really don't. Try not to take for granted the time that I do have with my kids, with my husband, with my family. Try to carve out, make sure that we carve out as much time together as we can, which is difficult. I mean, I have four teenagers. One of them's already driving. They're all in sports. I have an 8-year-old that's also playing sports, and just the after school activities and the weekends, social events, family events. There's a lot of moving pieces, but I really try to kind of stay focused on what's important. And if you would have asked me this probably before my fifth was born, so even 9 years ago, it was a very different story of trying to achieve balance. I felt was impossible. And I don't think it's impossible anymore. I just think everyone has a different perspective of what balance is. So my balance may not be what your balance is in life. And that's okay. It's trying to find out what is Melissa, what makes me feel happiest. And I try to make a conscious decision every day, planning wise. And the last thing I'll say is Sundays for me are family day and also a way for me to kind of forecast what my week is going to be like. I really take time on Sundays to look at my full calendar. I still have a written calendar, even though I have everything in my Outlook. I still like to physically see my whole week. And I think that's a big part of figuring out my balance for the week, is looking at where do I have spaces? What can I shift if I can? And not getting overwhelmed.
Yeah. No, and it's important to go through that process because, like, day to day, right? Moment by moment, decision by decision, like putting it in that mirror. And I think that that point about, you know, what it looked like 8 years ago or 9 years ago for you is totally different now, right? Having four children underneath 10 versus having four children and as teenagers, that's a whole different experience. They're more, a little bit more independent, but for you personally, you know, what is it that you practice, if anything, anything from exercise, mental health, your faith, spirituality, what do you practice for yourself? Because you are giving, right? You're giving in so many ways to your family, to the community. Do you have any regimes or routine that you practice for yourself?
Absolutely. Excuse me. Some of it I wish I could do more of. And again, that goes down to planning and seeing my day to day, but I love tennis. I'm an avid tennis player. When I could actually get out there and play for a couple of hours, I just feel so rejuvenated afterwards. And I'm also not looking at my phone for those 2 hours. And I think that's a big part of it. I try to find activities where even if I wanted to, I couldn't have my phone on me. I go for walks, but when I go for walks, I usually do have my phone. So it's kind of not really doing what I should 100%, right? It's getting me outside and getting me for walks and taking calls. Also, walking has been a great new addition that I'm doing. And, you know, other than also exercising and getting me healthy, you know, it gets me outside, which is a big part. I just love to be outside. The family and I have taken up pickleball. So playing pickleball with the kids, that is just such a fun activity for all of us. And then, you know, in terms of other things, I'm a super faithful person. I grew up very, very Catholic. And I've now adopted the Episcopalian religion and my kids are baptized Episcopalian. We go to an beautiful Episcopalian church. So we're Christian. And I would be lying if I say we go every Sunday, but we go often. And it's just, I think, that connection to spirituality, whatever, you know, whatever any person might look up to or think of as God or their spiritual practice. I think just the importance of connecting with yourself, having, you know, conversations within yourself, and having that time dedicated to that, really, I think for me personally, helps me. I think it's a great thing to see in my children as well, providing perspective and also giving them the room and the opportunity to figure out their own spirituality and, you know, connect with a greater energy or power, if you will, than I think is explainable. But that's part of just, I guess, the holistic view of myself and my family.
No, that's great. And it's essential, right? These are the essentials that keep you going. And I think a lot of times as women, you hear statistically, especially in the healthcare industry, is like women, we put ourselves last, right? We're a mom first, we're a daughter first, we're a wife first. And then the last thing that we cater to is ourselves. Especially as Latinas, because everything goes before us. So, and I know as a woman,
Latino guilt. I don't know if you
experienced
that, but there's this Latino guilt that I think most Latino and Latinas kind of grow up with. That you know, we need to kind of break through a little bit too.
Like, we got to do more. I'm just like,
yeah,
you're doing enough.
You're never doing enough, you know.
Yes. And it's so important to take those times. Like, I'm definitely a walker too. And most times I do have my phone, but it's just about getting out, getting the fresh air, getting clear, getting movement going. And I can definitely relate also to the spiritual piece. Like, that's my center. That's where I feel grounded the most. That's where I feel like I can show up and be very vulnerable and authentic. And then be in that servant leadership role. There's that compassion that you have to have for others. Absolutely. And where that comes from, where that centered is at, it's really important to always come back to that place of, this is why I'm doing this work, because it's heavy. This is heavy, systemic. Like, we're not talking about like flipping a burger and like calling it a day. Like, this is the real work, and you need those things and also that village. And I love that you spoke about that, because you're, we kind of be coined or deemed like the superwoman, but
no, at super, all.
No.
No way. I mean, there's no way I'd be able to do everything that I'm doing now without the incredible support that I have and the support around me. It's just, I'm eternally grateful for it, because there's just no way. I think I would maybe be in an insane asylum.
Right. Maybe. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So as we kind of wrap up, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on, like, what does, if you can kind of summarize it briefly, like, what would 10 years from now look like for Melissa and for Emerge Americas in the work that you guys are doing? Because I heard you say you guys are kind of in that forecasting role in the celebration for this year and what the next decade was going to look like. Do you have like any foresight on what you're imagining, envisioning for this?
Honestly, I think if we spoke 10 years from now and kind of looked back and saw that Miami continued to grow, that South Florida, people weren't really questioning anymore whether if and when it was going to become this global tech hub, that it just already there and people aren't questioning it or having conversations about what if anymore. I think that's definitely part of our goal. I think continuing to increase the work that we do with minority founders is definitely front and center. We want to expand our accelerator programs. We want to do more. We launched a fund this year. So now we're investing ourselves.
That's awesome.
More vehicle into these founders. So growing that fund, hopefully having maybe two or three funds, if you're asking me 10 years from now, that would be a dream of mine. And then I think just overall, in a personal level, feeling that I was happy, feeling that my kids, you know, continue to thrive and continue to be healthy and continue to be humble. And that for me is probably the most important, you know, creating a legacy for them that they can be proud of. and that hopefully they can channel within themselves and then let it, you know, manifest in each of them in different shapes and forms. But, you know, being a mom and hoping that your children become just good human beings, that's what I want. I want my kids not only to be happy, but to give back, to be compassionate, and, you know, to just make this world a better place. I know that sounds so cliche, but as a parent, there's nothing more that I would ask for than for people to meet my kids and say, these are just some good people. These are some good humans.
Yes. Yes. Well, if they're anything like you, I'm sure that they are and they will be. And who knows, you might add the title abuela, you know, in 10 years from now.
With five of them?
Yes.
I might be an abuela many times over.
Yes.
Hopefully not in 10 years, to be honest. My oldest will be 26 at the time. And so I guess you never know. But
you never know. You never know.
Let's talk about that in 15 to 20
15
years.
Okay. So we'll get you back on in about 15 years and we'll recap and see how much of this has come to fruition. But I think it's important to think about where we want to go, but be here in the moments, right? Be here now. And I can definitely speak to a lot of this type of work and just kind of that free spirited as entrepreneurs ourselves leading this work too. It's not always easy, but being present and being here now. And I wanted to ask you before we wrapped on any advice that you would have for entrepreneurs, whether they're already in their companies or they have these ideas and they want to just, you know, push forward and take the next best step. What type of advice would you have for an entrepreneur that would be watching this or listening in?
I'll give two pieces of advice. One, I guess they're both from experience. The second one is one that my father always told me from when I was younger, and then I realized from experience. The first one I would say is be willing to adapt. I think that I've seen through my work with entrepreneurs and being an entrepreneur myself, that we as entrepreneurs, of course, are very passionate about what we're building, which we should be. But sometimes, and I say this from myself being hard-headed at times, is not really taking in the input that people are giving you, that they are looking at this through a different lens, that they are looking at this also in your benefit as well. And sometimes we get stuck because of our own self, as opposed to kind of say, okay, wait, let's take this advice I was giving, and as opposed to immediately saying, no, you know, my way is correct, or it's either my way or the highway. I realized, and it's taken years to really realize this, is that if you are able to take that advice and potentially tweak or adapt based on it, that it could be very, very helpful to kind of look at it through the lens that they're providing. So that would be my first one, is be willing. It doesn't say take everyone's advice. That's not what I'm saying, but be willing to think through it and potentially adapt, which is difficult. And then the second one, which is, it's super simple phrase. And from when I was a very, very little girl, my father would always say, Melissa, whether it's in business or in your personal life, always keep your word. Always. And he's like, you're going to understand this later in life, but always keep your word. And I don't think there's better advice that he taught my brother and I, because he would also say, and it doesn't matter what you sign. It doesn't matter what you sign. Your word is more important than what you sign. So make sure that if you can't live up to your word, that you're transparent and you talk about it. Why couldn't you deliver on what you said, on what you promised, as opposed to kind of running away from it and not talking about it? And as I'm getting older, I realize that it's because it builds trust. It also builds your personal brand, which is so important. You never know in your personal, professional life, you're making these promises to people and they may say, you know, I really enjoyed what Melissa said or did, or she lived up to her word. And later on in life, that comes back tenfold or in a business relationship. And so that's something that when entrepreneurs are saying what they're going to deliver and or making promises, make sure that you are keeping your word. And if you can't, it's not a problem. Everyone, you know, there's some times where you cannot deliver on what you promised, that you give an explanation as to why, so that people understand why you couldn't deliver on that. Well, that would be my second one. Keep your word, both personal and professionally. And, you know, make sure that those people that are around you, they trust you. It's such a big part of life.
So that advice and those are amazing gems that you shared with us. And I feel like oftentimes, you know, we lose some of those things over the years from those generations passed down. So to hold on to that gem that I know is really strong with your father and my father's, that generation of keeping your word, it's so essential to give that advice now for entrepreneurs and people in business so that we can keep true to those things and those values, because integrity and our reputation is all about how we treat each other. So I appreciate those. But we love to end the episode with a pure message. We end every episode with our guests on a pure message, which ultimately is a positive message. That's what the Mosley platform is all about, a positive message, a pure message for our generation. And I would love to hear what you potentially like to share of your pure message and kind of like what keeps you going and what you do.
I think I would end with, it's just a quote that I tell myself, if not every day, multiple times a day. And it's by the late Steve Jobs. And that's, the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do. And I feel like we really live that and breathe that model every day. And I see it not only through ourselves, but I see that in the entrepreneurs that we work with. Because if you don't, you know, if you aren't one of those crazy ones that think they can change the world, then, you know, I don't know if you really will be able to have that impact. So believing that you can be one of those that can change the world, I think is a philosophy to live by, especially as an entrepreneur.
Definitely. Well, call us crazy because here we are, right? Changing the world in our own little ways, and also
a compliment.
Little and big ways.
Actually, by Linda Rottenberg. And I remember seeing, you know, when she launched it several years ago, saying, that's my motto, crazy is a compliment. I love it because how many times are entrepreneurs called crazy?
Yep.
All the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, any last final thoughts that you'd like to share before we fully wrap?
Just super grateful. Thank you. Thank you for having this conversation with me. Thank you for the opportunity. It's rare that I take an hour to kind of talk through all of these different topics. So it's extremely helpful for me. I think I found things from the questions that you asked that are helpful for me to kind of filter and think through. So just thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time out in the midst of the wildness and the craziness that you have going on, preparing for
great distraction, honestly.
Very awesome. Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you as a guest for the Moss LaRae Show. And we're excited for this to be episode 91 for our platform. So again, thank you and welcome Melissa Medina to our show. And you guys have been tuned in to the Moss LaRae Show, where we share heart-to-heart conversations and we bring more light everywhere. And we're signing off. Peace out.
Bye. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to the Moss LaRae Show. You can follow us on all social media at Moss LaRae, that's MASLARAE. You can also check out our website for more behind-the-scenes content at mosslaRae.com.